Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Hello, and welcome to In the Know with your new permanent host, Graham McQueen, who is just replacing Ryan forever, because Ryan's just not cutting it this year. No, I'm kidding. I'm just doing it this one time. Jake's here with me.
We sent Ryan a box of Star Wars action figures, and he's been too busy playing with them, I think, to try and record a podcast anytime soon.
Oh, man. Well, I'd rather be doing that right now.
I'm not going to lie, that actually sounds kind of fun, so I think I would be, if I was there, I'd be hanging out with him.
Yeah, I had to move into a new apartment all weekend, so any type of free time just sounds lovely right now. But we have a good podcast for you here. We're going to talk about some off-season storylines. We'll set the record straight for you guys. So, I think we might as well just jump right into it. So, Jake, I got right here. This first topic should always be the first topic. Anthony Davis. The off-season is about Anthony Davis. What do you think about that? What's going on?
I mean, yeah, he's the focal point of the team. Every decision needs to kind of mind. And so, yeah, I'll be honest with you. You know, the article came out. I think it was at The Ringer. I forget exactly where it was, where he finally has a team to grow with.
Yes. It's exactly the phrase.
Maybe you can shed some light on that. That's such a nebulous thing to say that doesn't, to me, have any real meaning. But I don't know what broken is supposed to signify to me.
Yeah, I'm not really. That's exactly what I had written down, was this grow with thing. It's what I see. I think it was that Ringer article. I'm not sure. I saw it thrown around on Twitter. And I have, I guess, like, it's a core, quote unquote, of like Holiday, Heald, and Hill. Better to grow with Davis than like Evans, Gordon, and Anderson. I'm not really sure about that.
I mean, it's weird because stuff you want to put around him, you want to surround him with a bunch of shooters. They added some shooters. You know, Buddy Hield, by the time he's ready, you know, yeah, they drafted him 6 overall, so you consider him a player who's part of the core of this team. But by the time he's really going to be significantly contributing, you're going to be worried if Anthony Davis is going to remain a Pelican in a year or two or not. So you got to wonder if, you know, while he's part of the core, he's not on the same timeline necessarily as Davis is. That's where my concern with it kind of is, in the phrase being thrown around.
Yeah, in complete agreement. So then we got, sticking on the Davis the Davis train, I guess. He was how involved do you think he was? We saw a couple things. I saw a couple things going out there that, you know, where somebody asked him, so how involved are you in the process? And he just said, I am involved in the process, you know, whatever that means. But he'd been kind of criticized or something before about how he wasn't really involved in recruiting players. And I think this offseason he specifically said, oh, yeah, like I've made some calls to guys or something like that. And I think you saw it with Terrence Jones.
The only one I could really see it being a factor in is with Terrence Jones, who I think they said had an offer from another team.
Yeah.
I think it was the Nets, for a little bit more money than what the Pelicans were offering him. You know, you look at this, Terrence Jones, yes, he probably recruited someone who was like, yes, come play with me. But the other thing is, look at these guys who they signed. It's the only one who had a ton of minutes by himself was Langston Galloway in New York, but he got a significant enough pay grade, and this is his home state. He's not coming to play specifically with Anthony Davis.
Right.
The only one is Terrence Jones.
And he had just a god-awful season last year. So, yeah.
It's really sad to me when everyone is so excited about Terrence frickin' Jones, who was one of the worst players in the NBA last season. I get his contract's nice. It's a one-year deal, so there's virtually no risk. But there's no high reward to me on a guy like that. You have mediocre reward.
Adequacy is a good word I would throw out there.
So I need to set the record straight on this, is that I've been calling this Pelicans offseason perfectly adequate. Kind of my phrase with it, you know.
Really?
To me, you don't get bonus points for not doing stupid things.
Yeah.
It's just kind of the norm. So I've been given a minus or a B, and my girlfriend coined it's perfectly adequate. And so I want to give her credit now, where everyone is listening. How I've been describing the Pelican season, the phrase came from her.
Word. Well. Nice little shout out there. That is a good phrase. I would completely agree with that phrase. That actually is a perfect segue into the next kind of topic I wanted to discuss, right? The off season is about, you know, two-way players. We saw some clear, obvious themes in the signings whoever we signed, Frazier, Galloway, Moore, Hill, and all those guys, you know, defense, attitude, approach, work ethic, but two-way players, it's just not something I can really get behind. You know, people love the local Langston Galloway, but, I mean, he's a career maybe average three-point shooter and not really good from anywhere else. Hill, same thing, he's barely average. Moore is, like, the definition of average, but his numbers are bumped up from, like, an amazing year last year. Is two-way players kind of a stretch? Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, a little. There's some potential, but you've got to wonder if, you know, they can reach the potential. Solomon Hill has shown kind of in the second half of last season.
Yeah.
He played particularly well in the playoffs this year. But again, that's why I just can't get behind these signings and I can't get excited. I just haven't seen it consistently enough from Solomon Hill. Yeah, has shown potential to reach it. It just doesn't mean he's good, but it means potential, and that kind of worries me as a Pelicans fan. How tired are you personally of being, you know, potential and all of these words, these words being shoved in your throat right now?
I know. Yeah, it's a lot of what ifs and maybes and could be's, and not a lot of hard facts here. Not a lot of top level talent. But
no, I mean, I think they improved certainly. Like, I'm not really upset about what they brought in. I'm not like angry at any of the money they gave out and the guys they brought in. I like Galloway enough. I like Solomon Hill. I like Moore. You know, I'm happy to bring back Tim Frazier.
Yeah.
Terrence Jones, I'm so iffy on, but they haven't done anything bad. I like these guys. These are guys that I think will contribute. And if anything, you know, the fact is they can shoot. You do have to respect them on the perimeter. And if they can play defense, and this is where, you know, the other wave of the two-way players comes in, they can actually up the defense. That's going to help tremendously.
Yeah, that's where the main focus needs to be. I think everyone's in agreement on that.
You still have Anthony Davis, who's going to be your major person offensively. And if they can just get him the ball in the right spots, kind of go back to what the original plan was when Gentry went in, you know, when he got hired with the charts and graphs and all the stories that come out of it,
And they, you know, get him the ball in those spots. They put shooters around him. His court gravity will make those guys slightly better three-point shooters, in my opinion, just because they're going to be so open most of the time.
Going off that, that's actually a perfect segue. So, if you haven't, you know, people listening to this, if you haven't checked it out, Black and Blue Report did, you know, they put up their interviews with all the new signings. Last week they had one with Solomon Hill, which was a great interview, by the way. This guy is really well-spoken, you know. His, like, the first thing he said about one of his goals was getting Holiday resigned next offseason, which is, you know, that's the first thing out of his mouth. I was like, oh, geez, this guy is bought in. But anyway, apparently, when Hill met with Gentry, with Alvin Gentry, Gentry showed him shooting numbers of players from before and after playing in his system. So I got a little thing for you here, Jake. I've researched some players who played in Phoenix under Alvin Gentry when he was head coach. And I've got the numbers with Gentry versus their career. And I'm going to put you on the spot, and I'm going to have to make you guess. I won't make you guess the numbers, but some of these guys are higher, some are even lower. We'll make you give some ballpark numbers. Does that sound good?
I'm going to have to remember these 7 seconds or less Suns teams really well and see what I can do here.
Yeah, here you go. So we'll start off with a good one, right? Grant Hill. What do you think his, you know, his career field goal percentage was before Gentry took over the Phoenix Suns? If you had to guess.
I'm going to be terrible at guessing the actual numbers. How's this? I'm going to say he definitely shot the Gentry system than he before. But I also, he was so good before all the injuries and everything, too. So now I'm kind of going to talk myself out of that answer.
Okay.
I'm going to say he was definitely better in Gentry's system. And I would say it might be significantly higher.
It was significantly higher. So from 1994 to 2008. He shot 27% from three. So that's over, like, 13, 14 seasons. He only shot 27% from three. But in his 2008, 2009 through 2011, 2012, the 4 years or 3.5 seasons he spent with Alvin Gentry, his three-point percentage shot all the way up to 36.5%, an increase of almost 10% to well above average.
Let me ask you, based off watching those teams and knowing Grant Hill, do you think that's due to Gentry's system in that 10% bump? Or, you know, he struggled with a lot of injuries and lost some of his athleticism. And you see that with players where when that kind of happens, they kind of try and become better spotter. I think it has more to do with Gentry or more to do with him reinventing his style of play.
That's a good question. I don't know. That's a really good question. It is. I mean, it's a very large boost. And if you're looking at his numbers, like the 2 years, so like 2006, 2007, he took 12 three-pointers in 65 games. In 2007 and 2008, he took, 104. And he saw a pretty big jump.
And that's a significant increase in volume.
Yeah, so 2007, 2008 was his first year in Phoenix, and that was Gentry was an assistant, not the head coach then. And he shot it at about 31.7%. First year with Alvin, he also shot 31.6%. But the next 2 years, he shot, you know, on average over 40%. So, just looking at numbers, I don't know. It seems like there is a clear trend where he arrives in Phoenix and starts shooting more threes.
Which is great. Pelicans need want more three-point shooting to put him. So, you know, even if he gets guys and has them taking a few more shots a game, think like Dante Cunningham taking a step or two back, I think it's a good thing here.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so Grant Hill, very big increase, but possibly not because of the system. Let's check out someone else. Leandro Barbosa. Leandro Barbosa played 2 years with Alvin Gentry. Do you think he shot higher or lower with Gentry than his career numbers for three? We'll just stick with three-point percentage.
He looked a weird one. I can't go. Am I like I should probably say higher given Gentry has shots on there? but I want to say lower.
It is lower, actually. He's a career 38.8% three-point shooter. He's actually, the 2 years he spent with Gentry, he only shot 35%. So.
It's still not horrible, you know, that's.
No. Well, so Gentry was.
I'll take that from certain people.
Oh, yeah. But Gentry was he was an assistant right under Pringles man for forever, right? On the D'Antoni forever. Barbosa.
That was good. It took me a second to realize what you're saying. Pringles man, he does exactly look like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, he does. That I have to give that one to our own Andrew. Andrew came up with that. Bourbon Street Shots, give him a follow. I think he's the one who came up with that comparison. But anyway, just going into Barbosa more. Barbosa actually shot a little bit under 40% of his entire time in Phoenix. But the 2 years where Gentry was a head coach, he dropped down to 35%. So, how about that? I don't know. I don't know what numbers he's showing him.
So, according to Clay, he's one for one so far.
One for one.
Gentry himself.
Next guy. Okay, this one's a good one. Goran Dragic. I hope I'm saying that right. I've heard it pronounced so many different ways. Dragic. Have you heard that one? I've heard that one.
Those are always, like, every now differently.
Yeah. Well, Dragic was only with Gentry for 2 years. He's actually rookie and sophomore seasons. So that might be a dead giveaway. But do you think... what do you think? Was he a better shooter with Gentry or for his career?
I'd say career than Gentry.
Career, he is a 35.5% three-point shooter. With Gentry, he is a 38.8% three-point shooter. So he was actually a better three-point shooter with Gentry.
That's interesting.
That is. Right? Because it's his rookie year, he shot 39% from the field. So he was struggling his rookie year. But his sophomore season, which was, if I'm not mistaken, that was that really good, they were all good, but that Suns team that made the playoff run, he actually...
Against the Lakers, yeah.
Yeah. So that was his sophomore year. He improved all the way up. He went from 39% as a rookie from the field to 45%. So he improved a lot under Gentry.
Telling that he was a better shooter in Gentry's system than outside of it. That's a good one for Gentry, in my opinion.
Yes, I think that's definitely a plus for Gentry.
Yeah, big check mark in his corner there.
We got two checks and one minus. Barbosa is down and Dragic and Hill up. All right, I got two more for you here. Two more. Okay, we'll say best for last. Okay, so Jason Richardson. Jason Richardson played one full season and two half seasons in Phoenix.
I'd say he's a better shooter in Gentry's system.
Jason Richardson was actually a much better shooter in Gentry's system. From three, he shot 39.4%, so almost 40% under Gentry. And as a career, he was only 37%. So look at that. That's another winner for Gentry.
And now we've got the best one, you said.
And the best one for last, Channing Frye. Channing Frye, recent NBA champion.
He's got to be higher, right?
For sure.
I feel like, unless you're really trying to trick me, which would be evil and I kind of dig it, he's got to be significantly higher.
Nope, actually dead even. Like, basically no change at all. He's a career 38.6% shooter from three. Under Gentry, and he ended up playing five seasons in Phoenix, which is a lot. But he shot 38.9, so it was only a point. 0.3%. So not even a whole percent difference from either threes or the field. But, just to throw out a but, before he came to Phoenix, before he even went to Phoenix, he was a career 28% shooter from three. So he didn't get good until he went to Gentry's system.
And then he kept it going.
And then he just kept it going afterwards, yeah.
So what do you think is the reason? So it's mainly improvements. Gentry's mainly right. So what would you say is a lot of the reasoning for that and why it's happening?
I don't know. He was a head coach elsewhere, you know, like the Clippers. So he probably had some other guys who had better numbers. But, you know, a lot. I only looked into five people. Where I looked into six, and one of them didn't
matter. Those
are
really good examples.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting, and you've got to wonder, you know, we didn't really get to see Gentry's offense that he wanted to run.
No.
And, you know, this probably worked when he was even in Golden State for a short period of time, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, what about these offenses, you know, that are kind of his calling card, I guess, and it's always the transition and things like that. And yeah, you'll get open shots if you're pushing in transition and going in on fast breaks and pulling up or getting shots at the rim easy. But think about a team like Golden State who forces defenses to switch on him. You get big on Steph Curry, and Steph Curry's going to, you know, shake them out of their shoes and get an open three. And you got to wonder if a lot of that will translate over to these guys. You know, I don't see Solomon Hill doing things like that. So it's going to, you know, remain to be seen. But you got to, you know, Gentry's got the numbers to definitely back himself up.
Yeah. I mean, one thing's for sure is that he gets his guys open looks, whether they're rhythm looks or just set looks or whatever it is. I think we even saw it last year where I think we had a pretty high number of open attempts. We just couldn't make anything. I mean,
sounds about right with the Pelicans for sure from last year, especially.
I mean, we had a rotating door of people, and then eventually we started, you know, getting people in there who were making something. You know, Tim Frazier came in and shot like 70% or something like that. But, you know, over like, what was it, like 20 games. But then you have, you know, other people who come in and maybe not so hot. But, yeah, it's hard to say what'll be the effect of, you know, seeing his something that resembles his actual system this year. It's hard to say.
Regardless, they brought in guys who are known for their shooting ability a lot of the time. Even Galloway's kind of average from three. He's much better in the corners than he is above the break. I think his percentage jumps kind of significantly. So even if you use him kind of in that anchor spot, like they've used Eric Gordon for years and years before he actually got good at three-point shooting, you're going to have an improvement.
That's true. Well, that's the only thing you can hope for is improvement. And, I mean, you could see – and, again, I encourage people to go check out that interview with Solomon Hill because he sounds – like, you could tell why Dell went to sign this guy. But they gave him, like, money, hope enough money to where you could see, okay, they're hoping for a lot from this guy. You know, they're banking on improvement from him. They're banking on more sticking with – or at least closer to the numbers he put up last year than, like, the first 2 years he was in the – you know, in the league.
Dell's pretty much staking his job on this. I think it's probably safe to say at this point, if this doesn't work, you have to imagine they're going to want to cut bait with him.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that. It's just, I don't think they would cut bait with him after the season unless this season was just a total, you know, cluster F. You know, I think if they get somewhere around 40 wins and it looks okay and the defense is improving, then you start to have more of a pitch to free agents next offseason and, you know, money, and you have assets that are actually tradable.
Worthwhile. Exactly. And things you can move this time.
Yeah, you know, instead of all your assets just – that's another thing about this offseason was people – and I guess this is a good segue, but people kind of went on about how we – okay, now we're getting assets instead of trading assets away. Well, you know, Tyreke Evans, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, those, even Oshik, like, those guys would have been assets if, you know, they didn't have, you know, a season or two or three derailed to injuries. Like, even Drew Holiday, right? Like, we weren't in a position to ever trade Gordon, ever. Tyreke Evans was looking like an asset, and then he didn't even, like, play at all last year. And obviously you had the fit issues or whatever. But had he not had three knee surgeries, he would have been easily, you know, we could have moved him easily. Or at least I think so.
It's with different injury health, it's something entirely different.
You know.
And, you know, the theme of this offseason would be something different entirely. You'd have maybe more optimism, and now it's kind of just everyone's down on this team. But, man, if they just hadn't had some, like, near historic bad injury luck, it would have been something different. Who knows if Eric Gordon, you know, Holiday and Evans would have all worked together when fully healthy, but at least we would have found out.
Yeah, we
never
even know
that chance.
We don't even know what would have happened. It's always going to be what if, you know. But that was the next topic. Is this offseason was about quote, correcting mistakes of the past. I've seen that one on Twitter quite a couple times. And this one for me, like, I understand it, right? Sending out assets versus getting it, whatever. Or the mentality of, okay, and, you know, whatever we were doing wasn't working, so let's do the opposite. I kind of get it, but I think it's lazy. I don't know. Because what mistakes are we correcting? Like, was Holiday really a mistake? Was Ryan Anderson really a mistake? You know, Oshik is still on the roster. How have we corrected that? You know, Evans is still on the roster. I don't really see how we're... Yeah, maybe there's a change in mentality. Okay, we need to build up the culture instead of building the culture and a winning team at the same time. But, I don't see it.
This one's a weird criticism to me.
Yeah.
And I could probably go on about this for, like, hours and hours and hours, which I will not do to people. But, so, correcting mistakes of the past in terms of what?
Exactly.
They kind of went out and signed young veterans, which he's always done.
Exactly.
Is the only mistake of the past. Now, you know, if Evans and Gordon and all of those guys worked, you'd be praising this guy. He's stuck to the same philosophy. He's just chosen different players this time.
Yeah.
That's the only difference. The guys are different. Not the same ones as before. It's, you know, these guys just easily be derailed due to injuries as well, or mm-hmm. fit being bad, but his core, like, the most base level philosophy he's had of signing young vets who've had experience, who are a little bit before their peak, has not changed. And the only thing you could see that he's done differently is he actually used his first round pick versus trading it away on Buddy Hield, and I'm not expecting Buddy Hield to be an impact player right away.
Yeah.
So keeping a guy who might be worse in the first year or two than what you could have traded the pick for is correcting past mistakes. I don't understand that one a whole lot.
Yeah.
To me, the only difference is they used a first-round pick instead of trading it.
Yeah. It was a little bit of a different offseason than last year, where last year we signed everybody. This year we signed new people. I don't really see how that's correcting anything. I'm in agreement.
Two years before that, they signed a ton of new people, you know, and the year before that, they brought in a bunch of new people. And so is anything actually different? No, just the players and their play styles. And like you said, maybe they focused on personality and work ethic a little bit more than they had in the past. But, you know, Drew Holiday's not known as a lazy guy. Omer Oshik's not known as a lazy guy.
No.
It wasn't like they were bringing in guys who got paid and then just decided, like, I'm going to get fat and beat Baron Davis.
Oh, God, I hated Baron Davis. But no, I agree, and I think we see it. You see it with the Saints. It's something that Sean Payton says every time. Well, you know, everybody criticizes the off seasons or whatever. He just says, no, he says the same thing every year. It's we take a look at, you know, we reevaluate every off season. We see where we can improve, and we go and do it, right? And I think that's exactly what they're doing with the Pelicans. They take a look at, they reevaluate where they're at every off season. You say, where can we improve? And we do it, right? Couple years ago, they had the opportunity to go out and sign, you know, Drew Holiday and Tyreek Evans. They went and did it. Last offseason, they looked at a team that was a playoff team. They talked to all the people, and this was the thing Dell kept saying, was all the players wanted to come back, right? When you have that kind of thing where all the players want to come back and play with each other, why would you break that up? So bring them all back. Okay, how can we improve the roster? Okay, well, we're in a position to get, you know, a bigger name coach and coaching staff. So they went out and did it, you know. So I don't really see how we're correcting anything. It's just, okay, how do we improve the team this offseason? Okay, let's go do it, you know. But whatever.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't fully understand that one.
Yeah. And I don't know. I've seen that one pop up every now and then, and I haven't been able to really form a solid argument as to why I don't like it, but I just don't. But, okay, next topic. We'll move on. Because I'm like you, I could just go on about that one.
Start screaming at each other, and that's not going to accomplish anything.
I end up screaming at some, like, I've done this a couple times recently, where I end up, like, in a screaming match with someone when we're really agreeing, and it gets really awkward. And I'm just going to avoid that whole thing. So, off-season is about, all right, it was Portland or Atlanta-esque. These are annoying me, right? We just had a Portland offseason. We just had an Atlanta offseason, right? We have Danny Ferry, so all of a sudden everything we do is like Atlanta, right? I think they had a – this one was a Ringer article. I think that where they just – they basically just compared our roster to Atlanta because we have Danny Ferry now. And I'm just – I didn't see – I saw maybe two of the comparisons, but the rest of them I just were like, this is garbage. I don't know. I thought – I just didn't like it. I don't like it.
So what's the comparison that people are making?
I don't know. We went and signed guys we knew who could compete and avoided big money contracts. That's the thing, is avoiding the big money players instead, like, dealing with the smaller contracts, getting a bunch of guys and depth in that you know can compete on both sides of the ball. Just like Portland did last year with Aminu and Harkless, and they got, like, a couple other guys. They got a bunch of other guys last year.
And it's funny that they keep throwing those two teams out there this year, and then what did those two teams do this offseason?
I know they went and spent money on Evan Turner and then went and
Evan Turner and Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
They went after big names. Evan Turner's definitely overpaid. That contract's terrible.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think anyone really likes Dwight Howard anymore, and he got a big contract. And so those two teams who were supposedly trying to be like in avoiding big money went and did big money.
Exactly.
You know, spending.
That's the thing is, I don't think we were avoiding big money. I just don't think we were in a position to get any big money players in here.
No, they weren't going to bring in Dwight Howard. They weren't going to certainly overpay for Evan Turner.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't going to throw a max contract at anyone. They could have, but no one was going to come here. There was so much money everywhere, and we had this on Bourbon Street Shots, I think around the middle of the season, was this isn't a free agent destination. If another team offers the same contract as the Pelicans do, they're probably going to take that other offer.
Yeah. Players don't – good players don't want to come in and help you make the playoffs. They want to come in and help you win in the playoffs, you know?
Yeah, or they want to be the star of the team, and you already have Anthony Davis here, and that way Anthony Davis might actually maybe hurt players coming here.
Yeah.
But, you know, no. And also, every team wants to sign – good players on cheap contracts. This isn't something Portland's doing. This isn't something Atlanta's doing. This is something every team's trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just when you get in that, when you have the opportunity and you like the guy, that's when you go out and spend the money, right? There's no way we could have gotten any of these. Like, sure, we could have overpaid somebody, but, you know, then, you know, we're criticizing everything, right? But that would just be a stupid move, so.
There was, but also, I mean, people were getting max deals constantly. You know, there was, you can't actually spend more than one of those.
Yeah.
You know, was it, I've got a max deal. They couldn't offer him more money to overpay for him.
Yeah.
There's a ceiling, and every team was reaching the ceiling with these guys. So no one's really overpaid, and it's one of those weird off seasons.
Yeah. Yeah. And next offseason, I think, be a little bit similar, but I don't think we'll see an offseason like this for a while. Maybe ever again.
No, this was definitely unique.
It was unique and probably a mistake to not smooth the cap, but that's, I don't know, that's just my opinion. Okay, last topic that I had. Did you happen to get a chance to see Alvin, or listen to Alvin Gentry on the Low Post?
I cut bits and pieces of what people told me, but I won't lie, I have not fully listened to it yet.
Okay. Well, this is my thing, right? And I think it's just, I mean, obviously they talk about what they're going to talk about beforehand, but this has been like a theme with Gentry for a while. And this is what, and I think if you focus to like what he's saying about what he's trying to do with his teams on the Low Post, you can kind of see the semblance of what he's trying to do with us. And it's just the focus is on, right, and this is how I would sum up our offseason and why people like our offseason, is just getting a group of guys together who want to play for each other, right? It seems really stupid, simple, and cliche, but I honestly think that's like the best way of describing it, is just getting a group of guys who want to and can compete and play with each other. What I mean by that, right? So he tells the story of the 2010 Suns, right? The ones that made the deep run into the playoffs. Is where he says the telling moment of the team is when, you know, Dragic and Barbosa went off in the third quarter, and then the starters refused to come back in, even though it was a playoff game, and you could just tell the guys all loved and wanted to play for each other and were rooting for each other. And then he says, you know, he saw the same thing in Golden State. and, you know, whatever. It's, you know, all feel good, lovey stuff. But then he talks about his Clippers head coaching job, and this is something no one really talks about with Alvin Gentry. I guess just because it was so long ago, forgotten about. He's had a lot of different things since then that are much more interesting. But they talk about what went wrong with his head coaching job, you know, with the LA Clippers. He got the team up to like 39 wins. And then the next year they just kind of bombed, and then he got fired. Right. But when he talks about what went wrong with the team, he doesn't talk about anything on the court or anything like that. He talks about the fact that they brought back guys he brought back essentially 8 free agents who were all young players who had never really made big money before. And he says it got to be a selfish team and they just could never turn it back around. And that just sounds so familiar. It sounds like something we've heard Alvin Gentry say at the beginning of the season. Everybody's playing selfish or whatever like that. The free agents coming back, people playing for themselves, you know, sounds like his argument with Tyreke Evans. And it just really strikes home to me. And I'm kind of sorry taking over here, going on my own rant. But
no, this is excellent. I'm digging this. Keep rolling.
But I honestly think that's the best way to sum it up. You know, is they just tried to get a group of guys together who will play and compete for each other.
No, I mean, that's a thing on teams. You need to have, you know, hungry people. And, you know, I said this around the middle of the season. A lot of these Pelicans players got first real guaranteed money for the first time. You saw Alexi Ajinsa get his first real NBA money, Alonzo G getting real NBA money.
Yeah.
Ashik got his contract. These guys got their contracts. Maybe they thought they were a shoe-in for the playoffs because they had made it before, and you just expect teams to improve rather than falling out. And they kind of took it easier. They were kind of selfish, or they weren't fighting as hard. And that's why you're hearing, you know, the buzzwords you talked about earlier. Work ethic, yeah, things like that, hunger, you know, gym rat, all these weren't necessarily described as a team because everyone got paid.
Yeah. Yeah. People got paid, and then I don't think anybody was going to be a free agent besides Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson. But Eric Gordon was essentially untradeable because of the injury history. Like, maybe you could have traded him at the trade deadline. And then Ryan Anderson's an interesting case because everything you hear about Ryan Anderson is that he's a great teammate, nice, funny, outspoken guy, but he literally can't play for people on defense. Like, he's just god awful at defense.
So, thing with him, and I've wondered this, and Brett Dawson of The Advocate, I think, mentioned this to me one day. He was curious if teammates actually like Ryan Anderson. A lot of his shots in games seem like if I were a player, they would piss me the hell off. A lot of those fadeaways, which he hits, but a lot of the time, you've got to wonder if it seems like he's actually going super hard out on the court, or if he's taking shots just to see if he can make them. You get what I mean, where I'm going with this? Or am I saying,
I know exactly what you mean. I kind of mentioned this, I don't know if it was on a podcast or in something I wrote or something, but it just seemed like as the years went by, people just threw him the ball and then just watched. And I don't think that's on them. I think that's a reaction to just how Ryan Anderson played. You throw him the ball, he's going to shoot it, right? There's no need to do any type of off-the-ball screens or off-the-ball actions or off-the-ball movement or anything, because you pass it to Ryan Anderson, he's not giving it up. And sometimes that's good, sometimes it's bad, but I think it was having, I think this year, a pretty obvious negative effect on the team. And I don't know if it's a thing where guys didn't like playing with him, but I don't know. I looked at the numbers, and like his assist percentage every year, like the number of his shots that were assisted every year, was going down, 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 and his unassisted ones were going up, 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 up. And I don't know if it was just people, I don't know, it just the drain of having to play with someone like that who worked really hard. I mean, Anderson didn't really have like that post game or the fadeaway game. You know, shot the whole time.
He's a hard worker. Yeah. You just got to wonder if teammates are going to like his style of play when he's on the court in games. And, you know, one of the things I've always said is if you want to see if a player likes their teammate, look if they cheer after he makes a shot on the bench. And
yeah.
I haven't done the,
you know, watching the film or paid enough attention to know if they do that for Anderson or not. But that's your test going forward for all of our listeners. If you want to see if teammates like, you know, each other, they cheer big time and go crazy when players make shots. If they're just kind of sitting there not moving, they probably don't like that guy.
I mean, the last time I could think about that was that, and I mean, it ended up being really disappointing, but the Golden State playoff series from 2014-15, when he went off in the third quarter and just made everything, we ended up choking that game away, you know, but that was the last time I really remember him getting, you know, into like that flamethrower mode, making shots and revving everybody up. Last season, I don't remember anything like that, not even close.
He's a very inconsistent shooter. Teams respect him and will always cover him, but if you look at his game log, he doesn't make more than two threes. I think he only makes three or more, only like a third of the time. So he's going to give you about two threes a game, but for his reputation, you would think it's significantly more than that. Yeah. And there were a lot of games where he had zero or he only had one, and so he just wasn't, while he's a three-point threat, he wasn't actually hitting those shots consistently. Yeah. Part of that's just no one on the Pelicans can hit open shots.
Right.
But Anderson, for his, you know, what his reputation is, should have done, feels like he should have given you more.
Yeah. And I don't know if it was just, you know, he's had a rough 2 years. And this has been talked about, you know, on and off the court. But that year before he got hurt, like the 19 or 20 games he was playing was his, like his best, it was like his best stretch of games he'd ever played, and then he got hurt. And just, you look at the numbers after when he came back, they've never really gotten back to the level he was at before. So I don't know if it's
just
something
with
like
the negative on defense. That's why I'm not very upset about him being gone.
No, but I think that's, you know, why they were okay with bringing him back, I think, because I think he was still probably a good fit, at least in the locker room, or like at least as a teammate. You know, maybe he wouldn't have had as big a role or something like that, but he was the only one they were okay bringing back. You know, whereas,
seemed like it.
Yeah.
They kind of assumed he was going to be gone and they weren't going to pay him what he wanted, but they were going to try and make a run, it seemed like, whereas Eric Gordon, they weren't even going to negotiate whatsoever.
Thank God.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's upset.
Yeah. So, that's about all I had. I had a little thing here where I've seen and heard anywhere from like 35 to 50 wins for this team. That's right, I heard 50. Maybe from a certain Bourbon Street Shots guy, putting us up there. But, you know, if you look at it, you know, Houston was 41-41 last year. Dallas was 42-40. Utah was 40-42. Phoenix was just, you know, they were torched with injuries, but they're a popular pick to get back in the playoff hunt. Minnesota's a popular pick to get back up in the playoff run. And Memphis was 42-40. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams that are all in that 500 range, at least last year or projected for this year. Do you see us beating out any of these teams? You know, Houston, Dallas, Utah, Phoenix, Minnesota, or Memphis? Because I think that's going
to
be our main competition for a playoff run. Not saying that we're going to be in the playoffs, but I think we'll at least be in the conversation.
No, not really. I think Dallas might be slightly worse. Portland seems like they'll be about the same, if not a little bit better, just kind of improving, unless maybe some of the big money they gave out this year puts, you know, people in a complacent situation. Utah is going to be significantly better. I don't know if Minnesota's at the playoff level just yet. I think they might be a look on the outside looking in, but they look like they could be. You know, I have the Pelicans pegged on my, like, way too early prediction. Probably, like I said, 41-41, perfectly adequate, and that gets you into the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to get you into the playoffs this coming season.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. I think 41-41 is a good projection. Not too much, but not too little.
No.
Just
kind of depressing given where they were 2 years ago, but, I mean, it's the reality of the situation. But, you know, if Gentry's system kicks in and they improve on defense, yeah, they might be able to kind of climb up there a little bit and at least get in solidly into the seventh spot.
Yeah. You know, you never know. You never know what can happen. We do have, like, a knack for beating certain teams. Now, Ryan Anderson would always go off against Cleveland for some reason.
Always.
The past 2 years.
Yeah.
For some reason, we give San Antonio fits, you know. I don't...
Yeah,
so,
and then always lose to, like, the Nuggets or Orlando.
Right, you know. So if we get that consistent, improve the defense type of thing where we have a better defense and a more consistent defense and have Gentry's offense kick in, you see some of those stupid – like, I think we lost the Lakers twice last year. I think that was the dumbest thing ever. But,
yeah.
Like, you might see some of that go away. And if you can sneak some of those wins that you – that you get that win against San Antonio or whatever it is, you can get some of those. You know, you might be able to make something happen. And you might just snag a 7 or 8 seed, you know. So who knows what will happen.
Well, I like that positivity at the end here.
Yeah. It's a good way to sign off. So.
Exactly.
Anything else? You got anything else?
No, that was good. We covered a lot today. I like it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We'll have to do it again sometime. Graham McQueen coming up the ranks. Watch out. Not really. But anyway. All right.
Now you have AC, so that's the good thing.
Oh, my gosh. Jesus. Oh, my God. I really just want to go off on the rant right now, but I'm not going to. Do not tempt me. Do not tempt me. All right. All right, Pelicans fans. Turn in next time.
Thanks for listening, you guys.
For the ones who get going when the going gets tough, and the ones who know we're tougher together. For the pathfinders breaking new ground, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as fast access to experts and 24/7 customer support. Because we know you have people depending on you, so you can always depend on us. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.